Before us, we have Sumner. Please introduce yourselves and talk to us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bridget Hadebe. I'm the president of the South African Mining Development Association. With me is Mr. Peter Temane, who's the chairman of the South African Mining Development Association. And then we have board members here with us, Mr. Peter Chiseve, and we have also Mr. Nkosinathi Ngwenya, who's a policy advisor, and we have a mineral economist with us, who is Mr. Emil Barches. SAMDA is an organization that was started from 1994 that represents the junior mining sector. These are companies that have an asset base of 50 million to 1 billion US dollars. And we started organizing ourselves for the very purpose that we saw the need to advocate the interest of the junior sector. Because prior to that, as you all know, the mining industry was very, 83% of the mineral resources was invested in the hands of four companies, and the state was not the custodian of the mineral rights, and foreign investors and local investors could not get access. And it's for that reason that because of the new South Africa and the MPRDA Act, that new players became very prominent in this mining sector. And hence you have the participation of South African Mining Development Association. You have seen me quite a lot since the establishment of the chart and the scorecard. I think you, many of you are tired of hearing me speak, because I've personally been in this industry for 26 years. But Mr. Temane has been the first black mining diamond producer in South Africa. And, of course, Mr. Peter Chiseve is a mining lawyer. The people who talk here are people that have experience. We were not, many of the SAMDA directors and the SAMDA participants are not people that were established during the 1994 era. Many of us came prior to that. And we are going to say many things that might make you wonder, why is it that people like us who are producers now suddenly talk as if, you know, we're on the other side? But we say these things because not only are we South Africans, we are also economic activists. And we'd like you to bear with us. We cannot continue living in this country, continue perpetuating the monopolies that existed in the past at the exclusion of the majority of the people. That's where we come from. While we recognize that profit is king, while we recognize the fact that business creates jobs, but this is not the fundamental thing that we have to focus on. We have to focus on issues that has to do in redressing the imbalances of the past. While you make the profit, while you create jobs, and that's my input. And the people that came here with me will speak from henceforth, and I'll be available with Mr. Emil and all of us to participate in the question and answer. Over to you, Mr. Peter Temane.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, ladies and gentlemen, and all protocol observed. SAMDA is extremely concerned that transformation in the mining industry has not been met and mining charter targets have not been achieved by the majority of the industry. The extension of the 15% ownership from 2009 to 2010 and the target from 2009 to 2014 is a betrayal of transformation. Furthermore, the human resources development and employment equity targets are extended from 2009 from a previous charter to 2014, hence delaying skills development and upliftment in the mining industry. In the amended charter, no reference is made of women and the disabled. We are concerned that 10% of women participation requirement of the original charter by 2009 has been abolished. The non-adherence to the housing and living conditions requirements, procurement and beneficiary requirements is a problem. Mine community and rural development requirements in the amended mining charter are vague and there are no specific targets to be committed to, despite the fact that the bulk of the South Africans are domiciled in vulnerable rural areas and do not enjoy the benefit of rural renewal projects. That will symbolize the value that is extracted from the communities in revenue accumulation by money investors. But having said that, I think I will hand over to Mr. Tseve to do the definitions in terms of the legal framework of the charter.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I go into the issue of dealing with the definitions and trying to explain and come up with what a SAMDA we see as the possible solution, I would like to give a brief overview of the purpose behind the legislation. You know, as a lawyer, when we draft legislation, there is a mischief that we aim to deal with. And in particular, when one looks at the MPRDA and the Mining Charter, read with the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act, one needs to look at what was the aim and what was the purpose of the enactment. And once you understand that, the next thing to look into is whether there is any ability to enforce that particular legislation. And I will start with the issue of the ability to enforce the legislation, in particular the MPRDA and the Mining Charter. For me, the most important thing people, and I'm going to throw the cat among the pigeons, is firstly to first look at whether the Act is adequate or inadequate. And to answer that question, one need to first understand whether there is ability to enforce the law or is understood in a manner that is clear to everyone. Why I say that is that, in my view and in my experience, a thief considers three things before he commits a crime. The first thing is the ability to be arrested or detected, and if arrested, whether there will be successful prosecution. And the last thing is how long is the sentence be. If one and two are negative, he'll commit a crime. Why I say that is that when we debate this whole issue of the mining charter and the mining legislation, we need to look at whether the law that we have in the first place is being properly implemented by the regulator. And why I say that is that in my experience, the structuring of transactions is fundamental. And so then we need to first understand what is a black company in the first place. Because the definition of a black company is key in whether we structure that. And I'll use an example. If I own 100% of the shares of a company, and I'm 100% funded by a bank, which is not BE compliant, am I still qualifying as a BE company? That's what we need to ask ourselves. If I own 70% of the rights, okay, and a non-BE company owns 30% of the rights, but there's a management agreement between the two of us, which takes 98% of the economic activity, is that still qualifying as a BEE? I think that's the question that we need to ask ourselves. Once we have those answers, then we can start talking. And the other issue that I thought I should talk about as an overview is the colloquium of government in silos. And I'll come to that in detail in due course. What I mean by working in silos is simply the following. You have the mining law, the mining charter, you've got DTI codes promulgated in terms of the Black Belt Economic Empowerment Act. The Black Belt Economic Empowerment Act was passed with an aim in mind. The charter seems to borrow some of the concepts from the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act. And without wanting to sound controversial, the aims of the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act was to deal with issues that were created with apartheid, to advance the interests of Africans, Indians, and colors, you know, as defined. Somehow, when you look at the Mining Charter and the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, you come across a definition of an HDSA. How that came about, only God knows, because the starting act in this whole process was the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment, black, which was talking about black people, and black people as defined. And why that creates a problem is that in the inclusion of HDSA, you now have white women. We are talking about economics here. I'm sitting here next to Mrs. Khadebe. Her brother, Mr. Mutsipe, from what I saw on the statistics, her company contributes to 2% to the whole 8% that we spoke about, which the DMR says is the official position of the BEE ownership in the mining sector. So if you take that 1% control 2%, do you need 100 white women or a million white women to constitute that 2% or more? You can only have one. So why I say that is that somehow, that's why I use the illustration of a thief. If we have laws that we cannot police, monitor and implement, we are wasting time. We're not going nowhere. And if you also consider what the Companies Act does and what the NPRDA tries to do are two different things. And I'll explain this in detail using an example. In terms of the Companies Act of 2008, there are 3 years of acquiring shares in a company. And that actually differs from the previous Companies Act, Section 92 in particular. Section 92 used to allow you to acquire shares by either contributing assets fairly valued or paying cash. This new act allows you to get shares by rendering services. If you look at the definition of consideration, it allows for a situation where someone can actually acquire shares in a company by rendering services. But let's use that in a practical scenario dealing with the mineral resources. I team up with a company that is not below, is not empowered or white owned. I own 40%, they own 60%, we apply for the rights. And my service as a black person is to ensure that they get the rights. I run around, I do whatever needs to be done, I smile with everyone at the DMR as a black person, I get the rights, okay? Once the prospecting right has been granted, they start mining. Let's argue for, use for argument's sake, in Sikukune. I come from Chakuma in Limpopo. Then the community start saying, no, we don't want this guy, he doesn't come from here, we want to participate. My co-shareholder turns around and says, look, it's your fellow blacks, it's not me, they don't want you. So you have to go. We need to get someone else from the area for us to be able to continue. We can't throw this license because of you. When he tells me that, between the time that he got the license and when he's telling me that, he was a compliant, okay? He then gets somebody else from Sikukune for another period. Between that period until there's another problem, he's compliant. And remember, mining is a diminishing resource. So those are the kind of challenges that I think as a regulator, there should be clear the rules to deal with that issue. Having said that, I think, in my view, the issue of defining HDSA as contained in the MPRDA and the Charter should be thrown out of the window because I think it defeats the purpose. And I think the sooner we realize that if we don't empower the majority of these people, we are sitting on a time bomb, the better. And if you look at the whole issue of what is an HDSA company, I mean, we see it all the time. The Preferential Procurement Act says black people. What is a black company? Can we agree on a definition of what is a black company? I would like someone to tell me what a black company is. And that also touches on the issue of net equity. Because what is net equity? If we have all these fairy structures that we see and we structure on a daily basis, do we still call that company a black company? And I think one that has been answered, we'll be in a position where we can say something. And just to also illustrate why the government system of working in silos further disadvantages black people and black entities. When you look at compliance, in terms of the New Companies Act, once you comply with that, Section 5 clearly states that in the event that there's a conflict between the two acts, any act for that matter, you first look into whether you can reconcile the interpretation of the two acts. If you can't, the New Companies Act trumps everything except the Banks Act, the Access to Information Act, and other acts. The DTI, or the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act, is not one of those acts. The mining law, the MPRDA, is not one of them. So it's a moving target. And just to conclude, when this idea of a 26% came about, the idea was to make sure that BEEs are not hoodwinked into agreeing to certain things by having the 26% because you need 75% to pass special resolutions. The New Companies Act allows for a situation where you can pass special resolution by having a difference of from up to 10%. To explain it in layman terms, If these ordinary resolutions are required to be passed by 50 plus 1, you can actually pass your special resolutions by 60 plus 1. What that means, it deals with the 75% problem, in the sense that you no longer need to critical consult with the BE or the minority, if the BE happen to be the minority. You can run the company as you see fit with the 60 plus 1%. And remember, the idea behind 26 was to make sure that special resolutions are passed with the participation of black companies or black entities or minority shareholders, if one may put it that way. But this is at moving targets, and these are laws passed by the ANC government. And I'm not talking about laws that were passed in the past. And I think it's time that the government departments start talking to each other, because it seemed to defeat the purpose in terms of the aims and objectives of the Money and Petroleum Development Act. Thank you. I'll ask my colleague to continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We're going to start by defining effective ownership. We suggest that the reference to HDSA be replaced with the word black people, as defined by my colleague. We suggest that on the same paragraph, when you're looking at the mining charter, which is page 5, Roman numerals, the word ownership should be defined to mean net equity, which means unencumbered net value or unencumbered ownership. The definition, should then retain economic interest, voting rights, and management control at board level. Okay. Sorry, I'm just trying to keep up with this. Having technology problems. Okay. The significant weaknesses of the amended charter is that there is the absence of unencumbered net value attributable to black shareholders. Hence, ownership is still unrealized in the majority of the BEE transactions. For example, the black majority of black producers still do not own mines. The shareholding has not been paid up. 92% of the mine ownership still vests in the hands of the historically advantaged producers, who are mostly foreign-owned. The achievement of the ownership target is a process and not an event. E.g., you conclude a deal, you repay back the debt, which then equates to unencumbered ownership. Hence, we say that we need unencumbered net value. The ownership element of the amended charter, which is on page 2 of the charter, is as follows. The continuing consequences of all previous deals concluded prior to the promulgation of the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, 28 of 2002, prior to 2002, would be included in calculating such credits or offsets in terms of market share as measured by the attributable units of production. We suggest that this paragraph be removed, as this is equivalent to once empowered, always empowered. For example, companies that concluded deals prior to the Act, the MPDRA Act, are absolved from engaging on further transactions because of this continuing consequences definition. We're then going to move on to employment equity. Employment equity policy must be based on the demographics of South Africa. We further wish to place emphasis on the positions that are occupied must also demonstrate related quality of relevance and not become window dressing. Somebody believes that occupied positions must demonstrate ongoing development of candidates as managers and as executives. The mining charter has disturbingly no targets for employment equity and has no targets for black women. E.g., mining companies are required to achieve a minimum of 40% HDSA representation at all occupational levels. This 40% target should be revised, and new targets for black people, black women, black disabled employees should be set. This target should also be in line with the economically active population EAP targets as determined by the State Assembly Department of Labor. This will ensure that there is no overrepresentation of certain races. We also suggest that the industry should dispense of its HDSA targets, as the definition of HDSA includes white women, Chinese people, and Korean people. The HDSA targets distort the true picture of transformation in the mining industry because of significant overrepresentation of white women in management. For example, and shows that there are 6.5% white women in top management when we're looking at the mining sector. This is well above the economically active population target of 5.3%. And if you have to compare the 6.5% to the target to the percentage of black women, it is 3%. And that 3% includes colored women, Indian women, and black African women. This is actually reflects an alarming underrepresentation of black women in management. A key area of concern is that the financial power of the Chinese people, who are also included in the HDSA definition, enables them to actually overpower all South Africans, including white women, in their investment capacity under the HDSA definition, which is why we believe that it should be done away with. The charter, the amended charter, must also introduce specific interventions to increase the representation of women, and in particular black women, in management and the industry at large. I would then like to move on to the point on employee share ownership schemes, ESOPs, as many people refer to. The amended charter in general does not adequately address the issue of ESOPs. ESOPs only appear under the definitions of the amended charter without any requirements or targets for benefiting employees under the share under the ESOP scheme. Therefore, we believe that employee share ownership schemes should not only be short-term schemes, but should live and exist through the life of the mine. On community benefits, we believe equity participation by communities in the mining industry is vital. The dividends paid to communities can be reinvested in rural renewal projects. Communities should also participate in beneficiation and procurement opportunities. It should not only be the royal family that benefits from the mining ventures, but the whole community should be beneficiaries to the mining investments made in that particular community. Procurement and enterprise development. We believe that effective, and I mean very effective, monitoring and implementation of BEE procurement and enterprise development by service providers in the industry is lacking. In the reviewed charter, the procurement target is 40% by 2014. There should be a procurement verification agency that will audit all procurement activities. The DTI, the DMR, organized labor and organized business, and rural communities should work towards creating a procurement agency together. Another issue of beneficiation, we believe a beneficiation council consisting of the DTI, the DMR, organized labor and organized business, MINTEC, CSR, should be established to develop a manual beneficiation strategy to monitor and to monitor the implementation adherence to the beneficiation strategy that is formulated by these relevant stakeholders. Moving on to the issue of enforcement. A significant weakness of the charter and the DMR is the failure to develop a robust system to monitor the implementation and the performance appraisals of adherence to the charter. Although the minister has stated in a 2011 budget speech that funds have been allocated for monitoring and evaluation purposes, we believe all monitoring and evaluation submissions and proofs must be co-signed in consultation with labor. Another gray area is that there is an overwhelming reluctance by the DMR to impose penalties on companies that have been in contravention of the law, despite having the authority to do so under the Act. The amended charter lacks a mechanism to independently verify the BEE contributions of mining companies, e.g., there is no mining sector verification agency to independently audit the BEE contributions, the implementation of the mining charter, and the progress made towards achieving the stipulated targets. There must also be a review of the verification certificates once a verification agency has been put in place. This will ensure that we avoid manipulation of by verification agencies. The stated targets that we have in the mining charter, e.g. the 40% of minimum HDSA participation average targets, must all be achieved by 2014. 2018. However, the scorecard requirements state that the 40% minimum target HDSA participation target should be adhered to by 2014. There is no correlation between the amended mining charter and the scorecard that comes with the amended mining charter. And when we're looking at the scorecard, just to highlight the issues of no correlation between the two, they're not in sync. The progress, we like to place emphasis that all progress set for each year must run concurrently as follows. The 2010 progress achieved in March 2010 and not in March 2011. The 2011 progress should be achieved in 2011 and not in March 2012, going on up to 2014. And then I'm sure we're all aware of the mining charter, so what we've now done is just giving you a brief overview of the two charters that we keep referring to. We have the original mining charter, which came into effect in 2004, and we have the amended mining charter as of last year. All of them had the following pillars: ownership and joint ventures under the old, the original mining charter had a target of 15% by 2009. This target in the amended mining charter was extended to March 2010. So mining companies had till March 2010 to basically adhere to that 15%. However, the scorecard also states that this target should be adhered to by March 2011. There needs to be clarity with regards to that matter. And 26% is basically the March 2014 target, and the scorecard also states that it's the March 2015 target. So to avoid misinterpretation by different stakeholders, there needs to be clarity with that. Management control. The mining sector does not have set targets for management control when compared to the rest of the economy. Therefore, it's not applicable. When we look at employment equity, the old charter had an employment equity target of 40% for all management levels, and women in mining had a target of 10%. The new charter, disappointingly, does not have a target for women in mining. We believe this should be re-looked at, and there should be a target set for women. And the 40% targets as well should also be increased because they are not in line with the demographics of the country. The amended charter then has different indicators, i.e. Board level, which is the executive management. And there's a problem there because executive management does not always mean you're going to sit on the board. Therefore, the board should go under management control, and the target must be set for management control. Then we have senior management critical score skills, which all have interim targets ranging from 20% and an overall achievement of 40% by 2014, which we have the view that should be re-looked at. The next issue is human resources development. The old charter had stated that by 2005, not less than 5,000 learnerships should basically be, employees should be afforded the opportunity to attend, to enroll into different learnerships, and every employee should have been offered the opportunity. This was not adhered to because currently we still have an industry that has 27% employees with no schooling at all, and we have an industry that has 17% of the overall workforce that has some sort of schooling. Therefore, the strict emphasis should be placed on human resources development to ensure longevity of the industry. The new targets for human resources development were set, and they're stipulated as a percentage of payroll, which eventually ends up at 5% of payroll. Payroll refers to your total salary bill for a company, and the highest is 5% by 2014. And under the preferential procurement element, we have three different indicators: capital goods, consumable goods, and services. The old charter did not have targets for this, and therefore it was addressed in the new charter, where they set 40% by 2014, and it keeps increasing for consumable goods to be 50%. The highest is 70% for services. The problem we find with procurement is that the definition includes HDSA entities. HDA entities could be all white women, and therefore they could qualify. And we feel that that should be re-looked at. And another problem with procurement is that a BE entity is also defined as an entity that has ownership of more than 25% HDSA, which we've already highlighted that it includes white Chinese women and all those other people. Therefore, and determining methodology to determine HDSA spend or to actually determine procurement spend. In many cases, HDSA spend is basically defined as a company with shareholding of 25%. As we highlighted, Anglo has a different methodology, Impala has a different methodology, therefore we need to have a common way to do it. And what we recommend is that all companies should have a common reporting template with clear definitions and declares information as follows: total procurement spend, discretionary spend, black spend, black empowered spend, black owned spend, and black women owned spend. This will avoid the issue that we have of saying that the industry procures more than 80% of the goods from HDSA owned entities. We then like to move on to the next section, which is our research. Okay, that table. What that table actually reflects is the top 25 mining companies in the industry. When you're looking at the top 25 mining companies industry, together the top 25 mining companies account for 1.9 trillion of the JSE. These top 25 companies also account for 98.2% of the total market capitalization of the JSE in terms of the mining sector. So therefore, these are very big companies. What we've now done there is on one on the third column we see HDSA percentage. What that does is it filters the companies according to the companies that have the highest HDSA participation. And therefore, the company with the highest HDSA participation is therefore African Rainbow Minerals, because they have a black shareholding of 55%. What is important about that black shareholding is that it is net value. Therefore, it is unencumbered net value, as in they don't owe anything on that shareholding. And the same applies to Impala. The reason why Impala has 16% shareholding, which is unencumbered, is because the community vended in the royalties and eventually ended up acquiring 16% of Impala. And that's why that stake is basically worth 17.4 billion, and ARM's unencumbered net value is worth 22 billion. We also have ESSO, which is number three, and the unencumbered value of that is 1.8 billion. And the companies that are highlighted in black, those are companies that have concluded BE deals at holding company level. When you mean holding company level, we mean at the parent company and not at subsidiary levels. The companies in green, such as BHP, Anglo, Anglo-American PLC, Kumba Iron Ore, Lonmin, Uranium One, all those companies have concluded deals at operational level, i.e. at mine level, and therefore they don't have net value or gross value at holding level. And the key thing there that we need to look at is to say the gross value of HDSA gross ownership on the JSE is 86.4 billion as of July 2011. And of that 86 billion that we say belongs to HDSA companies, only 47.7 billion of it has net value. And that 47.4 billion basically accounts for 2% of the 4% that HDSA companies own on the JSE. Therefore, it is only made up by three companies, with one company accounting for the 1.6%, which is ARM, and Implats accounting for 0.1%. So therefore, two companies actually hold the value of black ownership on the JSE. This is a serious issue that needs to be addressed, and the problem lies in the definition of HDSAs. We then move on to the next table. It's a bit blurry, I hope, but I'll talk through it. What we then did is we analyzed the top 11 companies within the JSE. What we did is we took BHP, we took Anglo, and you might see that there's no Anglo Platinum, there's no Kumba Iron Ore, because those companies are interlinked with Anglo American PLC. So therefore, to avoid double counting, we excluded them. What we then did is we looked at the amount of revenue that they generate. So these top 11 companies, the total revenue sits at about 725 billion. Rents for the financial year end of 2011 and 2010 county level. The cost of sales that they procure locally is 96 billion rand. The SED spend, which is a social economic development spend, for those companies that did disclose sits at 1.1 billion. And then the total amount of taxes that the top level companies paid works out to be about 19. Now, what this does, it also includes VAT returns. It's not just direct taxes in terms of corporate taxes. It's all the VAT returns. It's all the import duties. Everything that they paid over the size works out to about 1.9 trillion. I mean, sorry, not 1.9 trillion. It works out to 19 billion. We then analyze the employee costs, which worked out to be 61 billion. And if we're looking at total dividends that the top 11 companies actually paid, it equates to 32 billion rand in terms of total dividends. Now, of that 32 billion rand that was paid in dividends, only 13 billion of it remained in the country, i.e., it was paid to local shareholders. Irrespective of race, it was paid to South African shareholders. And 18 billion of that went to foreign owners. It went offshore. So therefore, what we're saying there is that even irrespective of your race, South Africa still does not benefit from the ownership of mining companies, because a great deal of money leaves the country. 18 billion will contribute significantly to the country's GDP. If that 18 billion is spent locally, we could be actually singing a different song. And what I would actually also like to highlight is give you an overview of the biggest two of the biggest companies on the JSE, which is Anglo American. Anglo American has a primary listing on the London Stock Exchange. They account for 445 billion of the JSE's total market capitalization in terms of mining. This is equivalent to 23%. When you consider associate companies such as Kumba Iron Ore, Anglo Platinum, and Exxaro, that value jumps up to 765 billion, which is approximately 40% of the JSE. The total dividend that was paid by Anglo is reflected in the previous table was 6 billion. 58% of Anglo shareholders are offshore, and the total of 3.7 billion was distributed to these offshore shareholders, and a figure of 2.3 billion then remained locally. That 2.3 billion is held by the PIC, and it's also held on the JSE, and also held by the Oppenheimer Family Trust. We then move into Anglo-American's core assets. What we do here is we analyze Anglo's footprint in the South African mining industry. They have a total of 10 operating assets in coal. Of those 10 operating assets, they only have two empowerment deals. They have one at the Mafube Colliery with Exxaro, which is a 50-50 joint venture, and Exxaro is an associate of Anglo-American. So therefore, if we have to look at effective interest, it will decrease from being a 50-50 joint venture and go to a higher figure. And then we have another joint venture, another partnership that they have with the Anglo-Inosiko. It was a deal that was concluded a few years back. And if we're looking at Anglo's iron ore and manganese assets, it is warehoused in Kumba Iron Ore in the Sishen mine and Tambazimbi mine, and they also have an interest in Simanco, where they hold 40% and BHP holds the 60%. The interest in Kumba Iron Ore, the remainder of that is held by the community and Exxaro. And then we also need to look at Anglo-American's PGM assets, because everybody seems to be talking about beneficiation and auto catalysts. And if we analyze Anglo-American's PGM assets, they have a total of 16 mines. And of that 16 mines, the mines that produce the most ounces are basically 100% owned by them. They then have partnerships at the Union Mine, where it's 85% and 15% split with the community, and then you have a 50-50 joint venture with ARM and Aquarius, and also have a joint venture with Xstrata, and then they have a partnership with the Royal Bafokeng Resources, which owns 67%. and then they have partnerships with Lonmin and Anorec. So that shows you Anglo's footprint and how big Anglo is in the PGM sector. And in diamonds, the diamond assets are basically warehoused by the interest in De Beers, which has an empowerment deal that is they have a total of seven assets, eight really in diamonds when you're considering the diamond, the marine mining. And Finch has recently been sold, so therefore the number will go down to seven assets. Now the next company that we would like to look at is Exile, because besides the fact that they account for 63 billion of the JSE, which is 3% of the total market cap, people like to refer to Exile as one of the most empowered companies. However, if we're looking at it face value-wise, Anglo American has a direct interest of 9% in Exile. This is a direct interest, as in it reflects on the share register. And what we will do is we go further to say that 55% that Exile claims to be HDSA, if we break that down and we look at the consortium, what makes up the BE shareholders, we have Air Caesar, which is 19% effectively, we have Air Land, which is 4%, we have Diesel, which is 4.9%, and we have Vasari, which is 5%. Those are the major shareholders within the BEE holdco. We then need to move down to say in Air Caesar, which is the largest shareholder in BEE holdco, who makes up an Air Caesar special purpose vehicle. We then have the Core Employees Trust with 6%, and there's talks that the Core Employees Trust has been sold. And then we have Anglo Coal, a subsidiary of Anglo American, only 11% within the BEE holdco. We also have PwC, the accounting and auditing firm, that owns 4%. We also have BHP that owns 9%. So at the end of the day, you need to take away 21% from that 51%. And then if you consider the IDC as well, that is 7%, you end up having a value of about 19%. That's excluding, that's including the other consultants like Basadi and Diesel, who we don't know if they've sold or not. So in actual fact, when you're looking at Exile and you go deeper and you look at the circulars, you realize that there is no 55% HDSA ownership. And anyone that has to dispute that will basically have to show the share registers of the companies within BEE Holdco, which they are very reluctant on. So this is as it stands. This is as it's not information that we sucked out of our bones. It's information that we receive from investment bankers and information that we receive from analyzing the pre-listing statements when the Kumba Iron Ore split happened and Exile was formed. We then go into BHP. What's important with Exile is that basically Anglo American and BHP sold assets to themselves. It was a normal, not normal transaction, but it was a transaction that was complicated and had so much media attention that nobody focused on the actual shareholders of the company. And it was the IDC basically financed a large portion of the BEE consortium. That's why there is no net value in Exile, and that's why we cannot say Exile is 55% owned. And we look at BHP. BHP really, over the last couple of years, has been decreasing the assets in South Africa. They've been selling some of them. But if we're looking at the amount of shareholders that are completely South African, irrespective of race and demographics, only 7.3% of those circulate on the JSE. And then 92% of BHP is completely offshore. And if we're looking at dividends that were paid, we have 2.8 billion that was paid to South Africans, and then 9.4 billion that was paid to offshore shareholders. And they declared a total dividends of 12.3. And then what we then do is, well, similar to what we did with Anglo American, we have BHP's core assets, which are all 100% owned by them. And there's a joint venture with Extractor PLC, And then what is important as well is that BHP has not converted the old order mining rights to new order mining rights as well. So that's why that is written there, so that everybody can see. I think that's a sign of the lack of transformation within BHP. And then if we're looking at the core projects, which they recently considering selling, they're still at prospecting phase. A majority of them are also 100% owned, and some of them, they have a few BE entities participating within those core projects. However, these are not operational. BHP is also involved in manganese and iron ore through Simanco, and they have 74% of the Hartwell mine. And Simanco is basically a 40% and 60% split between Anglo and BHP. After looking at the case studies, I would then like to move on to the issue of employment equity, because it can be argued that transformation does not only mean ownership, and that is true. Therefore, if we're looking to and we're analyzing independent sources, and we're not using our own research, because people like attacking independent research and they say it's not as independent as we make it out to be. So therefore, we use the Commission of Employment Equity report for 2010 and 2011, bearing in mind that all companies have to make annual submissions to the Department of Labor. And those annual submissions contain all the details in terms of the total workforce, and it is divided and categorized to race and all the demographics. And this Employment Equity Commission report shows that there's basically 3.4% black people in top management in the mining sector, which is black women. So this is a disturbingly low figure. And the percentage of white men in top management in the mining industry is 66.6% compared to 13% of black men. So this is not coming from our independent research. This is figures that are coming from the Employment Equity Commission report. So therefore, we need to ask a serious question to say, how do we achieve transformation and employment equity targets if the top management positions are still not reflecting South Africa's social fabric and also not reflecting South Africa's demographics? And there, I've basically stated that the Employment Commission analyzed 16,698 reports, which were submitted to them for the year-end 2010 and 2011. And then touching on the issue of human resources development, because they say that the reason why we don't have managers is because there's a skills shortage. That is an illogical argument, because if there are proper systems in place, i.e. retention policies and learning and development opportunities for mine workers, therefore you'll be able to train and develop young aspiring managers into positions that they can occupy in the future. And you can see this by analyzing the junior management levels in management. Those figures are extremely low. So therefore, they need to focus on human resources development. If we're looking at the DMR's presentation, they said that the total percentage of employees that are literate is 17%. This is what I was referring to earlier on. So if we're looking at an industry which employs a large number of people and only 17% of those are literate, there's a huge problem. And that 17% is basically made up of management positions. So the rest of the mining industry, we can safely say, lacks not basic schooling, but it lacks fundamental schooling. And that's where I would like to pass it on to my highly esteemed colleague, Mr. Damani. Thank you, Chair.
Before I conclude, I would like to make some observations that this government has tried to intervene. In 1998, they promulgated the Employment Equity Act, and 13 years down the line, we are still hustling with the compliance thereof. 2000, the government passed also another act, which is the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, in terms of acquiring services and capital expenditure on PEEs, we have failed to achieve that. Therefore, given the above evidence, it is clear that the transformation in the mining industry is yet to be achieved. The amended mining charter is a document that delays the implementation of the principles of true empowerment development over 16 years, e.g., the targets that were set in the original mining charter have been extended by the amended mining charter. There is a betrayal of transformation by the extension of the following targets: ownership, human resource development, employment equity, and no reference is made to the women and the disabled. Furthermore, human resource development and employment equity targets are extended from 2009 to 2014, hence delaying skills development and upliftment in the mining industry. A non-adherence of the following: housing and living conditions, procurement, and beneficiation, and no specific targets for mine community and rural development. Therefore, SAMDA would also want to support those who say this charter needs to be amended. The mining charter has a lot of weaknesses, and the alignment of the mining charter and the DTI codes is the best solution, even though the mining charter was promulgated before the DTI codes. With that, I thank you and will await our interaction with the team.
Thank you very much. I wish you would have been there on Wednesday. We were presented with two pictures of the same object. And it would appear that your presentation does agree with one of those pictures, and it even goes beyond. And what I like also is that you support your statements with researched material. And I don't know how far is the department with the Chamber of Mines in terms of comparing notes based on what they told us on Wednesday. But this picture painted here agrees with the Department of Mineral Resources that there is no transformation. And indeed, but let me not go further at the moment. Let me allow honorable members to engage, and then I'll come last, as usual. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chair. This is a greatly appreciated presentation from SAMDA, and also tells us the extent of our challenges. And it's reality, but also a bit depressing to see the load of work that we will have to uncover. But at any rate, Chairperson, I think I also just have general comments once again, because if you look at what has been presented from SAMDA, it's actually going to be, in a way, a repetition, as you said, of the experiences from Wednesday. But what I do want to note is that if there's a possibility, if it's possible, before we come to our concluding actions in terms of the charter, have an opportunity where we are able to perhaps have another opportunity or a round table, whatever you want to call it, with particular stakeholders. Namely, I would say it would be DMR itself, DTI, public enterprise, SAMDA could be part, NUMSA would be part, and WEPA, that just presented earlier. What is that, Weber? And yeah, in particular. Why I'm saying this is that from the looks of there's some commonalities that need more attention in terms of application of the charter. And before that can be corrected, I don't think we would get to our outcry of clarification of issues such as where sanctions need to be applied because of the grey areas or the gaps that are being identified in terms of the amendments that are needed. There's also a worrying factor which was mentioned by the presenters of working in silos. Before we can come together with DTI, because there's a lot that's been said about the issues, in particular the Act itself, where there's no coordination with changes being made in relation to the NPRDA as well as the Mining Charter itself. And unless those stakeholders come onto one table and we start discussing those particular issues, the meaning to the charter that we want to see forthcoming might not become reality if we don't do it that way. If you don't talk on one table and start putting that information together. The other issue, there was something that came up in relation to issues of skills development or human resource development. If you look at the target percentages that are put there, we did mention it, I think, also on Wednesday, that those percentages are rather low and slow. And because of that, we must realize the fact that, in actual fact, we are already applying the Skills Development Act. And employees, by now, in terms of training, there should be a return on investment, if I can put it that way, especially because there are bodies such as the CITAS, and in this case I think it's the NQA, that are able to give funding. So the issue of DMR not really wanting to align themselves with being the people who should be playing the key responsibility or leading the processes in ensuring that skills development programs are implemented is a worrying factor as to the explanation given in the charter in terms of what needs to be done. And every time we look at what the needs are, there's still no sanctions being applied in us ensuring that there's movement going forward. As a result, we all appear to be stagnant from all directions. The other point is the tendency of not being able to conform or to reach stipulated targets. It's becoming too often now that we identify the fact that we say by such and such a year, 2014, this percentage of a target should have been reached, and you find that it hasn't happened. And in the meantime, we're busy talking about the changes, that the amendments that need to be made in relation to the charter. Then what are we lining ourselves against? That's also another factor that I think we need to look into detail and just be realistic as to are we really doing justice in terms of the type of targets that are being set. Then we are also still facing a challenge in terms of our commodities and beneficiation. If you look at the table that was being presented now, in terms of ownership and shareholding, you know, there's a big gap. The figures are too wide apart, and I don't see there being any movement, especially when you come to think of black ownership versus the previously advantaged groups or mine owners. And it gives me the feeling that in terms of transformation, truly we haven't started anything. There's nothing that has started in terms of work or closing the gap is being made. This then also brings me to the fact that you already mentioned, Chair, I think earlier, that people, entities such as Sawuma that have withdrawn from coming to present for us to be able to see the actual challenges that are being faced by women in the mining sector, particularly black women, is going to create more difficulty for us to be able to come to conclusions or wider views as to what needs to be done to be factual, to be realistic in terms of the changes that need to be made in the charter. Because if there are going to be some groups that are in hiding in terms of coming to face up to views of the present charter, then it means that companies such as Sumda will continue to struggle because there's no backup in terms of giving a realistic picture as to what extent are we having problems or facing problems. Because then I end up starting to think that the problem is with them and not with the charter itself, for example. So overall, Chair, it's a bit gloomy, but it's fact.
Lucas?
I think I should add my voice to an appreciation for this document. I think this is a practical presentation here. It's people who are in the field and who burned their fingers and who know. So I must say that we must look at it more thoroughly, and I'm definitely going to study it more, and it's been a great help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just a few areas summed up, agreeing with the sentiments that have been raised by the honorable members here. In your very first page under the introduction, you are making the point up front that the targets have not been achieved. On Wednesday, the Department of Mineral Resources presented to us and said that the results of the assessment show that when it comes to ownership, the movement has been only around 9%, and that they acknowledged that other researches are indicating even a lower figure than the 9%. Came the Chamber of Mines, who said they have moved. They are now 28% in terms of ownership patterns in the industry. So they have even surpassed the 2014 targets. It created a problem on Wednesday, and indeed we've asked them to go back to compare notes and then bring a picture to us that is representative of what is taking place. But we also said there are other presenters that will present. Either they will confirm either one of these pictures. Hence I was saying that you basically, now there's that one issue. We want you to react to that, the 28% that they are talking about. Two, you're saying that the amended charter does not make reference to women, and neither does it make reference to disabled people. Now, the department indicated that they have accommodated those under the definition of demographics. I want to get to that definition. They say demographics means the numerical characteristics of a population, e.g. population size, age, structure, sex, stroke, gender, race, etc., etc. Now, in your view, does this cover the specific element of women in the mining industry? And we must remember this, as you have indicated, that black women were excluded from participating in the mining industry by law. And therefore, when you talk about redressing the imbalances of the past, you need to address that which went wrong. So let's hear your reaction in terms of that. And indeed, as honorable members have indicated, and I think the seed has been planted in my mind, that we need a further interaction, a round table of some kind, to look each other in the eye and say, what do we seek to achieve with this mining charter? And therefore, if we seek to achieve a particular objective, how do we get there? Because we've been out there through public, through oversight visits to mining communities. Our own eyes tell us that before you go into a mine, you walk through a sea of poverty before you enter the mine. That cannot be disputed by anybody, because we've seen it ourselves. It's not statistics, it's not figures, it's a real experience that we ourselves have experienced. And we've been saying, therefore, that if we don't change that picture, the problems will never disappear. But also generally, that when we talk about transformation, especially in the mining industry, we're seeking to address a particular challenge of the constitutional imperative, which requires us to develop these minerals for the benefit, for social and economic benefit of all South Africans. And I think that's a very serious call, that in all the mechanisms and tools that we develop, they need to speak to that aspect. And if, therefore, as the picture is now presented before us, we discover, which I think we are moving in that direction, of concluding that indeed there's no transformation in the mining industry. And I think we should not mince our words, honorable members, in one way or another. If there is no transformation, there is no transformation. And therefore we need to address that. Because if we don't, I'll repeat what I said on Wednesday, the events will overtake us. People have got a best right and a best claim to these mineral resources. And we can't take that away from them. This is their common heritage. And therefore, if we do not move in that direction, they are going to take actions that they see fit that will allow and enable them to access these mineral resources. They would not go past any kind of authority. We've seen what is happening in North Africa. Those kinds of uprisings are not as a result of some people who have got political agendas. It's as a result of communities directly, in particular in that instance, young people rising against a particular system. Now, the danger in South Africa is that we are pitching ourselves in the world to have a workable democratic system. But if the fruits of democracy are not enjoyed by the majority of the people in the country, then you must know that we are sitting on a ticking time bomb, as you have said, that people will lose confidence in the democratic process and seek other means of laying their claims on the resources of the country. And there's nothing you can do. You can have so many machine guns and whatever you have. Apartheid was brought down. Meanwhile, it was armed to teeth. But it was brought down eventually because the system itself was evil and the system itself was excluding quite a number of people. So I'm saying, therefore, the exercise we are engaged in is not just a talk show. That's why I agree with the suggestion that we need a round table to basically tease out exactly what is it that we're trying to address and how must we address it. The other point is, at some stage, we need to talk about some form of, you know, an investigation of who owns what in this mining industry. If you see these statistics that indicate that the bulk of the revenue generated in the mining industry goes offshore, surely something is wrong. We need, therefore, to address that particular situation. But then we'll address it if we know who owns what in the mining industry so that the picture becomes more clearer. So please respond to those that you can respond to, and then so that we can move.
Thank you, Chair. I will answer one, and I will allow my colleagues to add. The last one that refers to the DMR's demographics as addressing the issue of women, we beg to differ because in terms of our demographics, women are in a majority, actually more than 50% of women in the population of South Africa, which therefore says at least 50% of people who are employed in any level of the mining industry should be women. And in terms of the target, it says 40%. Which is less than the total number of women in South Africa. So therefore, we say it does not address that. And again, if you look at our constitution, it says that it needs to address the legal issues of the past. And women were specifically not given a chance to enter mining industry. And they have to have a specific law that addresses that kind of exclusion. And therefore, we say it must still come back to address the issues of women. Even though they are a numerical majority, they're still a numerical minority in terms of access to the mining industry. And I'll allow my other colleagues to see if they have any.
On the women issue, and Mr. Chisebe wants to speak about the ownership. You know, I think I'm probably one of the few women in the mining industry that qualify to speak. As the first black South African mining entrepreneur, 26 years ago. I started as a contract miner. NAM can testify to that because NAM actually gave me the first human resource manager. Human resource manager. And contract mining was the pits. And that was for a specific reason, to learn about mining from bottom up. And then later on become an owner. The laws for women were despicable. I don't want to start reminding myself of what I had to go through. And in particular, the laws for black women. And it was not by default when we started to negotiate the mining charter and the scorecard. I'm probably one of those few people that's still remaining, because on the other side were the captains of the industry. The Bobby Godsells, the Oppenheimers, and all those people that were owning 83% then of the mineral resources. Four companies. I made it very clear, and thank God at that time the minister was a woman also, that the 10% of women participation should at least be embedded in the charter. But to date, it's not there. We are singled. We combined under the word demographics. And where does that put us? So the mining industry was the only industry that legislatively, by law, endorsed the exclusion of women in many areas of mining. So this legislation must recognize that and do something about it. We are not happy with this amended charter. We made it very clear from the beginning that we differed greatly with the ministry about this. But nevertheless, it went ahead. So we are appealing to you. Women is just one angle. There are many aspects of the charter that are not right. And I cannot, 26 years down the line, I entered the industry when I was 25 years old. I'm 51. Still complain about the imbalances. Going to my village in Makau and all these villages where we are building mines and seeing the majority of the people poor. Surely, where is the compassionate capitalism? To which extent are we going to be genuine about these problems and look at these disparities? And as South Africa P2I Limited, together, black, white, yellow, green, solve the problems of the past so that we can create an enabling environment. And also similarly, the disabled. How long have disabled been overlooked? And why should they, like women, also be, grouped within demographics? I can speak on many of these aspects, but I'm going to ask Mr. Chisebe to speak about the ownership and whatever else you want.
Thanks, Mahadeva. Before I speak about the ownership, I just want to emphasize the issue of women, and so to make sure that it's clear in everyone's mind. People, South African black women suffered a double prejudice, and I'll explain what I mean by that. It was not only the law, it was the culture. White women, on the contrary, it was only cultural, where they had husbands who were working and running these organizations. And for a black woman, and a black African woman, it was double prejudice. So when we want to talk about the demographics, the way the DMR wants to argue it, I violently disagree with that, because I think we need to face reality. The majority of white black women in this country are struggling. And they continue to struggle. So that argument doesn't hold water. We shouldn't even entertain it, in my view. The issue of the 28% vis-a-vis the other percentages, Honorable Chair, lies on the definition of what's black. and what also lies in the definition of whether the company is actually black-owned, because some people include the debt, and other people look into the issue of whether there's negativity or not. And that's why in some instances you find that there's a higher number, because we concluded transaction today, we announced it as a 5 billion rand transaction. I have borrowed 5 billion with interest over a particular, I don't know how many number of years. I'm sitting at 15. They count it as a 26% BE, irrespective. Whether I'm going to see money or not is another issue. The other issue, which is of major challenge and also touches on, it's whether or not the minister has powers, you know, to cancel in terms of Section 47. And I would like to draw attention, Honorable Chairperson, to a similar clause that was contained in the Companies Act relating to the powers of the business rescue practitioners, which in the original draft allowed for a business practitioner to cancel, and that was debated, and a view was taken that such power amounts to executory power, which he can't have. I'm not sure, it may not have been raised at this stage, I'm not sure sitting here whether if Anglo-American was to fail to comply with the provisions of the Charter and the MPRDA, the Minister of Power to cancel, and if she does, I'm not sure either to what extent can one rely on the Agri-SA argument of expropriation. So those are the kind of things that we need to explore and look at quite carefully in terms of how they impact on what we're trying to do. Thank you.
Let's thank Senator very much. Yes? I thought you were addressing that.
Well, it's just adding on to what my colleague had said. Besides the fact that the problem lies in the definition, what must also be, we should look at is to say, first, let's analyze every transaction that's concluded, in which one of those transactions averaged above 16% or averaged above 15%. There is zero to none. What happens in most transactions where you find that there's they've sold 16% of an operation or at the top, the very following year or 6 months prior after that conclusion of the deal, that 16% is usually diluted to a percentage which is below 6%. If you like it. Reasons being, it could be the issue of you did not bring any money to the table, therefore you have to dilute your shareholding. So if we analyze how many deals have diluted their shareholdings, we can take Vela Panda, for example, and Goldfields. Currently, they're sitting at a figure below 2%, but they started off at a higher percentage. So we have to ask ourselves what has happened within that 5 years, and is the chamber still claiming the 15% that they signed on the 15% that was concluded at the inception of the deal, or are they counting the current state? Because if you're looking at the current status, there is no single empowerment transaction that stands beyond 14%. So that also adds the distortion of the figures. And to go further on the issue of women, I also beg to differ with the department to say that we as a society, we positively discriminate against women and people that are disabled. So therefore, why shouldn't the charter positively separate and discriminate against women? There should be explicit targets set. Because if we say HDSA participation and we include women, if you are operating a mine and three men walk in and there's two ladies that walk through the same door, you are more inclined to hire the men. But if we have a law that is explicit that says you have no choice but to hire women, you are therefore obliged to hire women. And if we have a law that says you must hire disabled people, you are therefore obliged to hire disabled people. And disabled does not always mean people who cannot walk, people who don't have hands. There are many forms of disabilities. And the Employment Equity Act, which specifies and clearly defines what disability is. So those are areas that we need to focus on, and the department cannot provide a compelling reason for saying it should be under demographics. Thank you.
Well, talk about the ownership. You see, when you look at the shareholders' agreement and you look at those loan agreements, you realize that the ownership structure does not have net value. Let me explain to you what they mean by net value. When you buy a house, and your house costs $1 million, you pay the bank $500,000 of that house. To the extent of it, you've paid the bank $500,000, you still owe another $500,000 to complete the payment of that $1 million. The day you conclude the payment of the $1 million, you own that house 100%. Similarly, the same is with the mine. To the extent that you've paid 100% of that equity participation for your shares, you then become an owner. And that is what we call unencumbered net value, meaning that net value without any debt. Now, a lot of these transactions of the BE companies are in debt. So on paper, it's written that this BE company owns 61%, 26%, whatever. But when you look at it, like you would look at your house, you will only own the house to the extent that you are able to pay for it. Come the day when you don't pay for that house, the bank then comes. And the bank says, oh, give me my money. The bank has two options, to either auction it or you can then go and sell. If the market of that house, the housing market is okay, you sell the house for 1.2, you've made 200. You pay the bank 500,000, you are left with 200. Then by you, if the market is bad, hence with the mine. The market, there's a credit crunch, or the market is bad, your share price goes down. What is effectively happening now with many of these BE transactions, especially pro, this has not happened just because of the credit crunch. This has been happening from day one. Many mining companies do not pay dividends. And BE companies are hoping to take the dividends so that they can repay the loan. Many mining companies, you find that the BE companies are, and you know, they entered at a very high rate. So the value of the mine is much higher than they should have entered, because they don't have mining engineers, they don't have lawyers, they don't have those sophisticated people to negotiate on their behalf. And you find that many of these BE companies do not have unencumbered net value. And these are the things that was a thorny issue, even when we were having this debate in addressing the charter with other stakeholders, because we were really pleading and requesting this net value, unencumbered net value, voting rights, and economic interest to be inserted in the charter. But all the other side, but the unencumbered net value is not. Companies have to wait for cash flow and all that. You don't own the cash flow unless you are an owner. So, you know, there are lots of flaws in this. And as you say, Mr. Chairperson, I think a round table or a little workshop around these issues would be very ideal, because we can then unpack all these issues. And this research that we did was over a period of 2 years. And it wasn't just done hastily. And it was very difficult to get full disclosure from the mining companies. And, I mean, you know, it was very difficult. So a lot of the information, fortunately, most of the mining companies are listed. And a lot of the information we could get then from the listed reporting. And, you know, we went through mining engineer, mining analysts, investment banks. You know, we used all options to come to this final, you know, report that we're giving. So if there are contrary figures to what we are saying, let's sit around the table and let's test those.
Thank you very much, Samda. Certainly, we'll look at this document and we'll look at the proposals that have been made, because the intention is to get to a point where the ideas converge in terms of what we are seeking to address. Can we have NEM setting themselves up and addressing us?
I'm not the you very much.
Which one are you looking for? Camden.
Honourable members, would you take your seats? We'll handle NUM and then handle one more, and we are done for the day.
Thank you, Chair. First, let's appreciate the invite by the committee. We will make presentation in two folds. The first part would be dealt by me. I'm Ikile Vuzeli Satanzi, NUM National Education Secretary. But before I zoom into our presentation, we wanted to comment on some of the presentations that were presented earlier on during the week, especially by the Chamber of Mines. The Chamber of Mines attacked the findings of Moloto report by the Department of Mineral Resources. We feel very strong that attack was not innocent. It was an attack on our integrity as the stakeholders who were part and parcel of the process to appoint that research. It is a deliberate attempt to rubbish the good work that the consultant and the findings thereof that we found by the report. We wanted to put it on record as NUM that we really don't appreciate the attitude of the Chamber of Mines. It's an attempt to deviate the attention to the real problems that are facing the industry. And secondly, we want to commend SAMDA for the good work they have done. The research capacity they provided, we wish we would have that. There are, say, some recommendations we want to talk to. Perhaps we are not able to comment on them before we conclude. Which are necessitated by the findings of the public hearings that you are proposing that the portfolio committee must meet all the stakeholders, all the departments, to critique and come up with the way forward in terms of the mining charter. As National Union of Mine Workers, we wanted to accept that invitation. The second point to that is that the lawyers, Weber Wenzel, are proposing the amendment in terms of Section 100 and other areas. If they are, since they are representing major shareholders, investors, the mining companies, would accept that. But we are not going to fall into a trap of selective areas in terms of amendment. If they are saying, let's amend, all the stakeholders, including the public, would be given or must be given opportunity to amend. The piece of paper we are having now is a compromise paper. If it is open for amendment, let that be. Would appreciate that as NUM. Then let me go to my presentation. We'll first share our experience in terms of the old mining charter, before we go to this one. Our experience with Chair is that the first mining charter was an expiring mining charter with absolutely no enforcement mechanism. And our experience, again, in terms of the implementation of the first one, was the question of the classification of women. I think Sanda was very clear in terms of what are these kinds of classification in terms of the law and what are the results. The results, therefore, was the results of the appointment of white women to all the strategic positions and black women to peripheral positions. That is our experience. And when we fought this, we found it very difficult because it is classified both in the Employment Equity Act and in terms of the old charter. Hence, we are sitting with this problem of Irish coffee, white at the top and black at the bottom. And another challenge we had in terms of the old charter was the lack of consultation requirements when the companies are reporting to the Department of then Mineral Resources and Energy. They were not marked at all. They would present whatever they would want to present, and it would be accepted. As a true reflection, that was a serious problem on our side. And again, we agree in terms of all the speakers who are saying that there are ambiguities, there were ambiguities in the previous charter where this 40%, we did not know where it starts and where it ends in management position. You would find that in the hierarchy of management, black people will be contested on the entry level, and at the top, they are white people, and they would comply. That was our experience. We repeat the lack of enforcement mechanism, as we indicated earlier on, that it was an aspiring charter. While Section 47 has been there and is still there, even in the new one, it was never been enforced to any company, despite all the reflections that were presented by everybody of non-compliance. That was our frustration. And the DMR earlier on indicated that Section 47 cannot be effected blindly so, because there are consequences. We don't want to fall into a trap where the question of job creation, joblessness, must be used against the culprits. We really don't want that. If the companies are not complying, our strong view is that Section 47 must be invoked. It has never been invoked. We don't want a situation where workers will be used as a human shield for the companies who are not complying. They would say, but if we comply and if you invoke Section 47, we'll close the mine and therefore workers will lose their jobs. And our experience in terms of the empowerment pillar was open. I think Sandra was very, very clear on that, open for abuse. And we found that perhaps, let me put it like this way, to us, the question of empowerment was a blind spot on our side. We felt it was not our space, and thus we did not give much attention to that. Guess what happened? 2008, when the financial crisis came, lawmakers are saying it's a financial meltdown, economic meltdown. Yeah. We experience an influx of these BEE to our head office, asking for an assistance. We said we abandoned our revolutionary task to assist our comrades. It was when then we started to pay an attention. We also realized that
the nature of the financial model which was used by these financial deals was very cruel. Not even to BE loans, but to workers themselves. The efforts that were concluded, we must accept that this was a new animal on our side. The implementation of it, therefore, we realized later that to a greater extent, we did not know that we don't know. We found that in some instances, these ESOPs are not yielding the results that were intended to be yielded by the ESOPs. And workers are strangled by loans that will never be able to pay at the end of the day. And again, the procurement team, I will talk about that earlier on, of the charter was a blind spot to us. And we are of the view, in terms of the suggestions and recommendations we'll be making, that is one area we feel that is going to create a lot of jobs, it's going to make an impact. I wish Weber and Wenzel are still here. That is one sector which is not transformed. And to say they don't need to comply is a direct attempt to undermine transformation by a large legal firm like them. Hence, we believe that if they're having that view, we're not surprised as to why that department is not transforming. We agree in terms of the mine community and rural development. There is not a refined approach even in this current mining charter, and we are open to be engaged on that one. Social and labor plan, we found that it was just a paperwork, tick in the box, and we go. The companies would close, but nothing would happen. Turn on the employment equity. We share a lot of we share the same sentiment with Samda that in terms of our experience, the classification or the definition of historical disadvantages, it gives us serious problems, which is talking to what I've already indicated, that at the top, Samda came up with figures. You'd find white males followed by white women, and that is the serious problem we experience. And the 10% requirement of the old charter made things very worse for us, because they just populated black women at the top, at the bottom, and white women at the top. I must also talk about these demographics definition in terms of the new charter. There was a good intention in terms of putting that which perhaps maybe we did not apply our minds properly. We as a stakeholders, we wanted to overcome that problem we are experiencing in terms of this problem of white women at the top and at the bottom. We then said NAM Congress came with a very strong position to say that the requirement must be blacks. We pushed that during the process of the engagement, but the problem was we felt the product of the engagement will be litigated not only by the stakeholders involved, but other stakeholders like AfriForum. I'm sorry that I will mention them, because I know that there are other organizations that are having a good working relationship with them. So as stakeholders, we had to find a middle ground that will mitigate the potential litigation in terms of the product of the process. So that is why we came with the demographics. We thought instead of be specific and say black people, the definition we came up with as to whether it's right or wrong, we need to be advised. The legal minds like those of data perhaps can assist us. We are still in terms of the stakeholders, we are having a meet date. If we can say, put all these comments and put in that forum and say, out of the public hearings that are coming, here are the issues, how do we deal with them? I dealt with the Chamber of Mines. They're also claiming that the majority of their members do not have hostels. I'm not going to use English here, but in the absence of any decent word, I would say again that is an attack on our integrity, because we know that the gold sector is one of hostel-dominated sectors. Platinum is one of the hostel-dominated sectors. And therefore, we really dispute the assessment by the Chamber of Mines. Okay, go on. Okay. Do you want to take on here? Yeah. I will hand over to Comrade Matt Daughter to continue then.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, on the pillar of procurement and enterprise development, what we've discovered in the old charter is that the industry, led by Chamber of Mines, of course, and some other independent mining companies, had a problem to open the pillar of procurement. It is opened by invitation, not by BEE companies approaching either mining industry or relevant mines. It seems to be an element of selective approach, that some companies approaching the industry get access, and some are told there's a very long list upon which they must wait for them to first come into the entry level and register as potential suppliers. When that registration does not necessarily mean that they will get work to supply. That's the first problem, Chair. The second issue that was discovered was that Department of Mineral Resources would have a very good intention to deal with this pillar, but its problem is only capacity in this instance. That in most instances it would either rely on consulting research or on getting reports from the industries and thus creating a long way for the department to act when this is not adhered to, Chair. And some of the BE companies are not creating, contributing to job creation because they sell the products from importing companies. So necessarily you would register just as a regulator. You only supply, but you not develop capacity to manufacture. Because we're going to get manufactured and ready-made products elsewhere, they're brought to you, you only supply them to the industry. That's not creating jobs enough in this instance. But also there's another level, high level of fronting in this instance used there.
And, again, here on the BEE, what we have learned, Comrade Sam, is that most of these BE comrades are highly indebted. They do not have access to cash flow, voting rights, real value, this has been said. And most of the ESOPs, which were completed, we realized in 2008 that the workers are not going to get any value out of those because of the way they were structured. Considering some of the examples of the ESOPs that were concluded, on the left, you would have Northam. By 2009, it was sitting at 49 million. The nature of that is that the company is required to contribute 4% of the profit after tax towards the trust. And we found it very, very, very lucrative. Kumba Resources is one of the ESOPs that are promising. Optimum Coal Holdings. We don't have one model. There are different models we are using because the mining charter doesn't prescribe as to what kind of ESOP you must enter. Exaro, we are in dispute with them because we realize that the cake is too big. The estimation is that workers, it has vested. Workers are going to get at around plus minus 300,000 to 400,000. And the company now is starting to say, has come to us and say, let's distribute it according to the ranks, not the way it was. So we differ with that one. Impala is also vesting this year. We foresee some challenges in terms of the expectation from the workers because workers are thinking that it was not supposed to be taxed. So it's a question of workers must be educated. Anglo Gold, Harmon, Anglo Gold, Ashanti. On the right are the ESOPs that were concluded, but we are experiencing problems. Samanco, for example, the whole BE deal was refinanced, and that is going to have an impact on the ESOPs. We intervene when the shareholders were fighting, and Section 47 was issued there, but it was not effected. PMC is running around trying to cheat workers. We requested that we want to conduct a due diligence both on the whole BE transaction, but they refuse. The committees, despite our advice that they must not sign, have signed, and we anticipate problems. The extractor, we are having problems. Lonmin, DRB, Goldfield. And our view is that these ESOPs should be, there must be a legislative requirement which talks to as to how much the ESOPs must be in terms of the percentage. As for now, the companies would just, some would give 2%, some 10, so there is no requirement, and that is opening us up.
Chair, in proceeding on the human resource development, so there is a general lack of companies to combine transformation. Look, it's not only the issue about the chart. There's the Employment Equity Act, the Skills Development Act. Even without the money that companies would have been compelled to comply with Employment Equity Act, Skills Development Act, but as it stands, with addition of the money charter, there's no progress on transformation. The view by the Chamber of Mines is not surprising. It's because if the charter has an element around compliance where the department says, on the basis of material conditions, non-compliance would then be allowed. Once you insert that, all of the mining companies have is to employ lawyers to find a convincing material condition for them not to comply. And that convincing material condition is the first. They must detect something elsewhere and not to them. First, blame the department. Secondly, blame ambiguity. When an actual person didn't even ask to be clarified on some of the issues. Secondly, the national skill shortage, it's used as an excuse on lack of transmission because if you don't say you're not able to transform because there are no requisite skills, but at the same time, you don't have either independent development plans for each employee or your skills development plan does not necessarily seek to address your weaknesses or skills that you get in. The problem is that graduates cannot access experiential learning or they are deliberately frustrated to leave. If you check most of the graduates that would be found either in the Department of Mineral Resources or also in the mining industry, mining practitioners, it's not the first way. They're employed by the mines. Now they are frustrated. Now leave them, not the mines, for any of us in their support. They secretly leave. They got in, secretly leave. And I mean, it's on the basis of being frustrated by the industry, the basis of its lack of preparedness to transform it. Now, that's the problem. One of the issues there is that I mean that the career choice of skill to access funding should be an employee's choice and not the company. What you have here in the mining industry is that if an employee is a local operator, where I need a kind of battery and a liberty to do well, they refuse me. They say, no, that's not your career option. You can only develop to a long where cooperation is required. Which means they make an assumption that by being employed as a local operator, that doesn't become your career choice. When in actual fact, within the company, they have lawyers or they have a hospital. If you want to do medicine, they say, no, you can't be employed as an underground assistant. And don't be forced to do medicine because that's not in line with your work requirement. And this is a problem that gives us a problem. Now, when we go ahead to the recommendations, the first recommendation I want to say, and all of them are aligned with the charter, is that Parliament must change the focus on the debate on empowering individuals. Focus on empowering more of mine workers and communities, both hosting communities and labor communities. Now, in this instance, we argue that use ESOPs, use community trusts, but define what they mean by community ownership. Because in most instances, community ownership is highly contested on the basis of how a particular community is organized. For instance, you would have traditional controlled communities like Rwanda Fugue. Rather for being as an authority benefits. Once that becomes the role of government in defining how the benefits should then be distributed to the people as a whole. The second recommendation says that we require that Parliament mandate DMR and COGTA to develop a policy on community investment. This thing about company choosing to invest in and then claim that was a community investment. For instance, they would give you funding to start a chicken farm. With that funding, the startup funding, which not necessarily does not concentrate on the whole value chain of chicken farming. If you would give a startup funding and the fail, then they write in a report that $2 million was given for startup funding. It's not necessarily the impact that investment yields to that particular community. So requesting that DMR and COGTA at least works on a conclusive and very clear community investment policy. These investment policies must also include the role of government. For instance, if you take Eastern Cape, majority of the mining companies are prepared to fund projects in Eastern Cape, but the problem is that the provincial government does not have plans for those projects. So if a particular mine is prepared to fund a school to a tune of $2 million, if the Department of Education in Eastern Cape does not have plans to construct the same school, so there would not be kind of funding available for the shortfall because the guy who has planned does not have a plan to construct a new school there. It's only the man that has a encouraged a particular mining company to invest there. So that was defined in the policy. We also requested that Parliament calls on the National Planning Commission to develop a mining sector strategy long term. What we have with DMR is a 5-year plan, 5-year strategy. That defines the current tenure of a particular minister. So now we can then be engaged on the basis of 5 years and then 5 years. That's why our community development and investment, it's not long term. It's because companies do it on the basis of preparing themselves for reporting back to the department chair. When we proceed with recommendations, we argue that DMR was closely DTR on the enterprise development role of the mine. Some of the problems have been raised about DTR codes, but we think that one of the weaknesses of the country's approach to mining is to assume that mining stands alone there, and that anything we develop for mining should be made for mining, which has no sustainability or linkage to a country's overall policy framework. So we play in the role of DTR because enterprise development is not the core responsibility of DMR. It's the core responsibility of DTI that they develop entities and enterprises in South Africa. This is how you do. Allowing DMR to be aware of this one, I think that is a good thing. We also call that government must mandate by DMR and DTI to jointly convene a summit on procurement and enterprise development in the mining industry. But on the basis of sustainability around health and safety, we still insist, Chair, that Council for Geoscience, BioNTech, and Health and Safety Council should frustrate a process of technological advancement to detect which exactly will exact with most possibilities of sustainability. This shifting of responsibility, you go to Council for Geoscience, they tell you the responsibility of MINTEC, go to MINTEC, they say there's no budget, you go to MINTEC, they say the council, they need up and down. We think and have that everybody would find exact technology to detect where gold is. But nobody seems to be prepared to find the exact technology that depends on where a particular panel is going to test. So that the process of removing mine workers is informed by the correct information that allows them to be safe. The other chair is around requiring for BA Council and DTI to develop a formula to be used by assessing ownership and procurement. There is a right chamber of mines comes to Parliament to our elected representatives, and as a fact, they've also elected them. There is a whole Department of Mineral Resources is lying. We are correct. It's because how you assess ownership and procurement, it's not the same. Each and every company does its own assessment. Number one, a concurrent assessment that will be used by the industry. What Department of Mineral Resources uses and what companies in the mining industry uses should be the same, and that nobody be allowed to use his or her own view. The reason why they claim to be 28% is because they don't want to do away with the principle. They would use his reciprocals. And then what they don't do, they do an average on the basis of value and what somebody has argued. So they don't go to 28%, but the reality is, why would you average ownership? When I answer that, each entity has its own right that it has to be looked at. So I argue for that, Chair. We suggested, Chair, that in fact, what Parliament must look at is to make a mineral charter a concessionary contract to the mineral right. When a mineral government apply want to convert, you give them first the money charters, they will give you a week. Go find a legal and an economic lawyer to advise you on this document. Next week we'll give you an application. Before you give them an application, give them money charter. They will say, we give them, you are offering this mineral right. All the provision that you're going to comply with this chart. And then when you do an assessment and you find that they're not compliant, they've complied below 70%, then what the answer was suggesting this week, give the minister a power by law that on the basis of non-compliance to the chart, irrespective of the clause of the chart, you have a right to revoke the right. And that right to revoke the right must be concurrent. You revoke the right and concurrently auction the right for bidders who are prepared to use the right and use the implementation of the money chart. Don't only revoke and say we're giving you time. Most of the mining companies from 2002 have been given time to work up into the standard of the charter, but none of them have ever been told that their rights are not going to be approved. Now, non-compliance, if the compliance is by just because they're not any way, it has no bearing on the license. Why could it remain a minor right for a company whose interest is not in South Africa? So we argue that that power be given to the minister. And that the money charter be meaningful because it is developed out of the charter. Okay. It's developed out of the charter. Now, being developed out of the charter means that there must be legal with a mineral right and charter obligations. Okay. That's our argument. We also call for strengthening of Section 42. And Section 99. This deals with either penalties and deals with the powers to cancel. So if the NPR says the minister on behalf of the South Africans has a right to approve or reject, we must see this right to reject being clearly defined. And that there must be action from DMR that while our right was rejected, these were the reasons. The other suggestion that we're making is that Parliament will then propose for the introduction of the Mineral Beneficiation Commission. The reason which I want to argue about this, the fragmentation within government is at times confusing. Department of Mineral Resources develops a mineral beneficiation strategy. Department of DTI and Department of Science and Technology and then Department of Economic Development want a commission that takes responsibility on mineral beneficiation irrespective of what minerals you deal with, but then that responsibility has been charged not with Department of Mineral Resources, but with Department of Trade and Industry, and that you include higher education, you include MINTEC, you include CSIR, you include Department of Science and Technology, because then there would be a need to look into better developments in that regard. We also call the chair for Parliament to mandate the Minister of DMR, COGTA and Rural Development to strengthen and clearly define policies on social and labor plans. The problem is that we would have social and labor plans, companies develop them. The first problem is that it's not compulsory for companies to negotiate with unions on those social and labor plans. When we are asked to own our opinion by the Department of Mineral Resources, because we're not consulted, we simply say we have no idea of what we're talking about. So we have the right to either reject what they submitted because we're not consulted, or then refer them back. When they are referred back, consultation is not, you must take what they are saying. It can be that a man in a western area, that 10 kilometers away from Bagger's Barn, which government has a project of urban renewal to remove the better portion of Bagger's Barn to a new area? None of those lines have their social plans talking about that project of removing payment of servicing its workers on potentials of dangers for diplomatic conditions. But because of the responsibility of government, none of the companies there reflect on their social and labor plan that we must take a responsibility on how to contribute or what is our role. All that social royal project in Pakistan, where we draw those workers. We think that, that's very weak in this instance. But also the IDPs, take for instance, in the government on its own, a local IDP does not talk to an ESCOM plan. ESCOM has its own plan on electrification. Then the municipality has its own plan on building houses. Then they are caught by surprise that in actual fact we did not plan for electricity for this housing development. The housing development takes 3 months again for ESCOM to readjust its program and have a program for special electrification of that. If you have that on government, how much more need either local companies, between local companies and local municipalities? We call for Parliament to find a way of how do you fine-tune this coordination of IDP responsibilities and involvement by local companies to local communities and businesses, but those must also take to other communities. We also call for Parliament, there's a law here on ownership. Within that, we must remind Parliament that ownership does not mean the current situation. We suggest that we remind Cabinet that there is still the responsibility of developing an approach on state or government company and the President of the Republic for this process. Just send a reminder to Cabinet that that conceptual work of state or government company must very urgently find its way to Parliament so that you don't take over for processes of public hearings. We have patience on allowing minor companies to be the sole beneficiaries when the state can't have a way of doing this thing. And bear in mind, we have lots of minor companies with the state of Alaska. You have African Minerals Finance and Exploration, then you have different investments by either ITC or that, and then you have limited only some persons. Please work on coordination and cabinet on that, sir. But also that call Parliament as a reminder that it must institute an implementation of its previous decision on the need to investigate both living and working conditions of my workers. Remember, there was a motion submitted by the current deputy minister in Parliament that was approved. We've not seen implementation of that approval. That Parliament is becoming active and looking at this. We call on Parliament here to take a very clear, you see, the issue of white women is a problem. We do have to take a resolution to exclude white women on ownership and employment equity beneficiaries. This is not an unfair discrimination. It's a fair discrimination purely because when you say they must be counted under ownership demand, the next thing that would happen is that all the partners who are owners are going to resign and give their spouses to own. You have not brought the problem, you just transferred a capacitated entity just to a white woman. Secondly, on employment equity, they have proven, so what they do, if they are expected to combine prime positions in senior management, then they look around. When they are making an employment equity plan, they say, we will do away with 6 positions in the 10 and remain with 4. If they 1976, they put three white women. Then there are seven. Then they put three. It's an Indian, a colored, and a black African. Then they are compliant. Now, on compliance, they would say we are at 60%. Yes, they did that 60% because that's what the law allows them to do. But the fact of the matter is that they're not at 60%, they're at 30% because they've done reverse racism on the other 30%. So we're calling for Parliament to take an action on this. Now, tell me what in conclusion to just, we know you may not be dealing with theory, but the fact of the matter is that you are not here purely on your own. I want to remind you of Karl Marx when I said that dominant views in any society are those of the ruling class. Just look into the presentation by Chamber of Mines. In that presentation, there is this ideological conception that we are not being in power, but we are ruling on our graves. So we vote for the African National Congress. Capitalists who lose still rule. They either go to a court and tell government who should be a candidate for that, or go to court and tell you that you do this as you say explicitly. So people who rule are not necessarily the ones that are elected. And they accepted this and didn't say that view of candidates as parliamentarians. Go consult Marx. You may not say this is what Karl Marx said, but the fact of the matter is that he has explicit. And then, Chair, we want to thank you for the invitation of the UN to participate in this public hearing. We will accept any other further engagement if it is meant to resolve the current problem that we're having. Without necessarily calling for that or that, the fact of the matter is that the current growth trajectory in the mining industry is not sustainable on any basis. So others may call for nationalization, others may call for that and that, but the fact of the matter is that it's a matter that we must engage head on to. Thanks.
Thank you very much, NUM. Honorable members, there you've got the picture depicted by the National Union of Mine Workers. Any questions, comments?
Chairperson, appreciation also for the presentation. But just to add that on what I had recommended in the issue of the roundtable, obviously there's an addition to the list of possible stakeholder participants, which I possibly could have excluded when I suggested, just such that we add them, in particular MINTEC and CSIR that I've taken note of would be relevant. Yeah, the Department of Science and Technology as well for consideration. But also what is also part of a problem that we need to focus on in terms of the e-structuring, the triple B double e-structuring, is the issue, this issue of fronting. I think I need to make a request that we need to look at it also from the perspective that there seems to be a continuous problem of small-scale miners being dependent on bigger mining companies, in particularly for funding. And without that relevant fund, would then experience problems in them being able to continue their own operations. That we need to also look at a finer detail in terms of them being protected in terms of the charter. In one way or the other, because it does look like we tend to forget that without them getting any form of assistance, the sustainability and viability of their existence might become irrelevant. Then the other issue to add to that, Chair, is that the the Department of GMR in terms of what we'd said for them being a supervisory or a regulatory body on the issue of a state-owned mining company versus them having ownership of mines in terms of percentages. Now again, the issue of the majority ownership falling in the wrong hands and the majority ownership or rather the commodities being sent outside the country. You know, now around that needs to be looked into. It doesn't look like we are getting to a point where DMR is actually applying pressure and ensuring that whatever is owned in majority or whatever is exported rather to outside countries is not really fast-tracked in ensuring that we first mine within the country and manufacture within the country to our own satisfaction. They will also need to debacle around that with DTI in particular to see what best mechanisms can be put into place. I'm just mentioning that because as the presentations come, every time such issues do come to mind that we need to first check some of the laws. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Anyhow, I think we appreciate the presentation that you have made. In line with the previous presentation, you are giving us specific recommendations in each subheading that you are dealing with. And just before I make a final point on your presentation, in page page seven, you are making reference to the merger of MDA and Deba Development Trust. The question, therefore, is whether this merger has taken place already, or are you suggesting that these entities should merge to undertake the developmental work that you are referring to? The other matter is that you are also discussing extensively some suggestions in relation to beneficiation. Like we have said to NUMSA, we're going to be holding public hearings specifically on the beneficiation strategy, and we would like you to prepare yourselves towards that. The other matter is that you are the second presenters to basically try to assist us on the problem we have on Wednesday. And I think your words were quite clear in that what was presented by the Chamber of Mines is highly doubtful. And in a way, you are basically vindicating the Department of Mineral Resources in terms of the work that they have commissioned through the Moloto Services Company. And indeed, we're going to go back to them, because even when you look at your page 5, where you discuss the issue of the accommodation of workers, it's contrary to what they told us. And, of course, we are going to need to find a way of clarifying and re-clarifying these issues with them, because this is an August house. No one can just come and say what he or she thinks. We're looking for facts when we deal with these matters, so that those facts must assist us in taking decisions. Now, if you come and conduct a PR exercise in Parliament, then you are missing the point altogether of why do we call you to appear before us. So we are not going to leave this matter with chamber lying low. If it's proven by facts as you have done between yourselves and Samda, indeed, it means we will have to call them back here and interrogate them on what they had told us, because that's tantamount to misleading the highest institution in the country, and we cannot allow that under our watch. So I'm saying you're the second grouping to basically counter the information that was forwarded by the Chamber of Mines, and that makes us worried, and we would want that corrected. I'm happy that you are open in terms of possible amendments and that you accept the invitation in terms of the roundtable to identify these shortcomings and begin to then move towards closing the gaps that are there in this transformation tool that is agreed upon by everybody else that it is necessary. But just react to some of the remarks we have made, and then we move. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. In terms of funding, there are three interventions that we need to look at. Harsh penalties. We really feel that we need to come up with the interventions. We know one company on our side that was caught funding, and what was worse about it, when they were caught by the Department of Minerals, they took the 5% which was missing and said they are giving it to the workers without telling us that they are having issues with the DMR. We only found later that the 5% in terms of the shareholding they were giving to workers, it was questionable. We then therefore rejected it. But there were no consequences for the behavior of that company. In terms of the smaller miners depending on bigger mining companies, we agree. What we want to propose is that the state must play a role, because people who are disparate can take anything. The funders would say would fund your project, but these are the conditions. That is where the problem of funding comes. Disparate people would accept everything. The debate about the state bank needs to be entered into and be accelerated. We foresee that the state bank would play a meaningful role in terms of addressing these challenges we are facing with. And the state would need to come to party. That is the third element of what I want to say. In terms of investing on exploration, most of junior miners who are struggling would like to venture into mining, but because of an intense capital requirement of mining, they can't start mining from exploration up to development. It becomes very difficult. So we think that discussions need to start around these areas. In terms of ownership, we appreciate that priorities must be given to developmental needs of the country. Hence, on our slide, which is on the board, we are proposing that Parliament must engage around the commodities we are mentioning there. We accept the invitation on beneficiation. Thank you, sir.
It's not only small scale miners. Alex was still depends on how to sell its main diamonds. This issue of funding capacity of research by Sanda. If they were to do research and check as to what are the reasons why 90% of the bills and related bills are sold to Petra. that finding on its own, that 90% of what the bill is going to sell, one way, even before it's sold, it's going to be sold to Petra. That's the cosmetic, and then give that to another company. But the fact of the matter is that each mine they sell, they ultimately sell it to Petra Diamonds in this instance. All the negotiations are viewing that we must not amend that section 26 in the MPRDA. It's not very clear on what exactly must be done on beneficiation. We must condone that the rate at which you export raw materials would be an extra tax for anyone who sells raw materials comparative to what he or she does on beneficiation of what alone. The interest, even now the problem, the interest by the coal miners is to take coal to Richards Bay coal terminals and sell it overseas. They even budget for the Eskom fine. The reason why there's a time Eskom with serious needs of coal or load shedding is because the quality coal has not been given to Eskom. It has been sold to Richards Bay coal terminals, and then a penalty paid back to Eskom. If you have to discuss ownership, because opening a coal mine has a direct link to coal supply, why should therefore state not have a majority share ownership in a mine that is intrinsically linked to Eskom on coal supply? Just for security of energy, they don't have a problem because they can budget for paying penalties to Eskom. We don't have them as an extra tax or just raw materials being taken out. Even the issue about iron ore being only shipped to Solidarity, on the issue of TEDA and LDA, there's already a process in motion for the merger. The reason why we call for Parliament to have a word on that merger is because one of the reasons why we're not making a meaningful contribution to community development, particularly on labor-friendly areas, it's because TEDA and LDA are competing. TEDA funds a project in the same community to a tune of 1 million. LDA, just in the same community, funds the same project in a tune of 2 million. Whereas, if they had combined the million to the 2 million for one project, it would have far-reaching consequences or benefits to that particular community. In actual fact, it's the same with many companies. They find on competitive grounds, this man finds this project, that man finds this, it's all the same community, because they claim that when you report to DMR, you don't report on joint projects, you report on projects that have carried out and they end it. To eliminate competition on community investment and to make community investment meaningful, you must have a way where you allow and compel companies to join forces if it needs to. It's like on this issue of TEDA and LDHS. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let's thank you, NUM. And we have seriously run out of time. We have got two remaining entities to table their submission, but my fear is that our numbers have depleted, and I wanted to make this appeal. I know that COSATU is mostly resident within Western Cape, but I'm afraid Solidarity has flown in. Would you be comfortable if it's either one of the two issues. One is either you leave us with your document without having spoken to it, and then we peruse it when we look at the total sum of presentations made to us, or we schedule you to be the first entity next Wednesday. Of course, we are mindful of the costs and all of that, but on the other hand, it becomes important when you speak to your document so that you give us insight and the what you call. Can you give us an indication for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. From our side, I know we're deep into lunchtime, and we thought we'll give you some food for thought. But in this regard, we would rather appreciate to reschedule and speak to our document on Wednesday. I think it will just not do justice to our presentations, and some of the items that we've listed are just merely bullet points that we would like to talk to.
Thank you very much. We thank you for that understanding. We will make you the first presenters yourselves and COSATU on next Wednesday, and we really appreciate your understanding in this regard. The reason is just simple that we don't want to, because of time, do a rush job. To us, quality in terms of this engagement is important, so that whatever decision we arrive at, it's based on the interactions and the basically questions and answers session, which would give us more understanding of the thinking. So we thank you very much for that understanding. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, let me thank you all for coming through. The committee secretary, apart from COSATU and Solidarity on Wednesday, will indicate who else, so that no one else incurs costs coming through and end up not presenting, but we'll deal with that. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I didn't get to hear you.
Are you going to be able to transfer it?
I'm starting that process now.
Okay, fine. I won't rush you. Sorry.
Yes. Thanks for the presentation. Appreciate it. I'm sorry I have to leave with the document list.
Hi. Are you still a mess?
Yeah.